Thank you for being here this morning. Good to be together. Our story this morning begins in the beginning. That is, after all, a good place to start. The entire first chapter of the first book of the Bible is dedicated to creation. Light replaces darkness. The atmosphere is separated from the earth. The waters of the great oceans need to know their limits. Mountains rise up. Rivers begin to flow towards the sea. The planets and galaxies are created. Vegetation covers the land. Fruit trees, avocados, turnips, and broccoli. Great fish and sea monsters were created, and the birds of the air took flight. Camels and crocodiles, foxes and squirrels, leopards and lemmings. And with each passing day, God looked at creation and God liked it. It was good. It was very good. And on day six, humans were made. Not just made, they were made in the image of God. Female and male in the image of God. In the beginning, God sought to bring order out of chaos. And there was a whole lot of chaos going on. A chaos of creation. A creation that we will never totally understand. Now, if you look at the cosmos today and talk to scientists, they will tell us that the chaos of creation is still taking place. New stars, new worlds, black holes, unimaginable power, energy, and beauty. Perhaps some of it is random. Then again, perhaps none of it is random. It is all a part of God's grand design. In the beginning, God sought to bring order out of chaos. The earth was formed out of chaos. 4.5 billion years ago, the earth was spinning much faster than it does now. Each day was perhaps only 12 hours long. The earth was minding its own business when suddenly chaos happened. A planet the size of Mars slammed into the earth. It was a mess. It was chaos. It was doubtful that any life could have survived it. The collision would spin off a tremendous amount of chaotic material. The mass of that material would come together and it would become our moon. An accident? I'm not buying it. Without the moon, the world as we know it would not exist. Perhaps there'd be no life at all, but we know for sure that the tides would be almost non-existent, and couples could not fall in love by the light of the silvery moon. And the chaos was not over. In some ways, it was just beginning. There would be times when the earth was mostly uninhabitable. There would be floods, ice ages, meteor strikes, millions of years of volcanism, and lava flows. Right here in our neighborhood, the lava flows of the Columbia Plateau would continue for 10 to 15 million years. That lava is some 6,000 feet thick today. A testimony to the chaos of a time before time. In the beginning, God sought to bring order out of chaos. How are we to understand all this? Well, as Christian people, we always begin with Jesus. We begin with Jesus. Every story should begin with Jesus. Every event, every teaching in the Bible should be viewed through the lens of Jesus, his ministry, his life, and his teachings. For Jesus was and is, we believe, the most complete revelation of God that we have. So order out of chaos. Why? Jesus tells us that he came that we might have life and have it abundantly. Abundant life. Life in abundance. It seems that was always God's dream for creation. Now our text this morning for the book of Genesis chronicles the days of creation. And once we get to day six, humans are created. And then the reading ends in this way. God said to the humans, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Subdue. Dominion. Do you use those words very often in your day-to-day life? Would you consider those words to have a positive or negative connotation? Honey, I'll be right in for dinner, but first I need to go subdue the neighbors. And remember, I have dominion over you, so that dinner better be on the table when I get back. Does that sound good? No. Subdue. Dominion. Could it be that the words have been misunderstood? They are, after all, translated from an ancient language, ancient Hebrew. Subdue is a verb, to conquer, to vanquish, to control by an exertion of the will. Is this our God-given place? To vanquish the animals? To vanquish the creatures of God who share the planet with us? Would anyone here this morning want to be vanquished? But subdue means something else. It also means to bring the land under cultivation. Might we say to work with the land that together we might bless creation? You see, how we understand the word subdue could make a big difference in our theology and consequently in our practice. Dominion, the second word. Perhaps it too is the wrong word. Dominion, domineering, domination. Did God want us to dominate the animals, the birds, the fish, and the forest? Or was it something else? Now the Bible tells us that humans were given dominion over planet Earth. Dominion, jurisdiction, command, authority, control. But both the dominion of the planet and the call to subdue or cultivate it was based on God's previously stated desire. Namely, that we would be fruitful and multiply. Fruitful. Might we define that as a fruitful existence, as an abundant existence? Abundant life for all of God's creation. Back to Jesus. Jesus calls us to service, and he modeled that in foot washing humility. But humility seems to be at the opposite end of the spectrum from domination, does it not? And I can't find a single case in the Bible where Jesus subdued anything or anyone. And the one who was willing to die on a cross did not exercise dominion either. At least not as we understand this word. Subdue, dominion, our calling from God in the book of Genesis. But could we have it all wrong? How we understand these words are critical because that the understanding of these words informs our practice. Dominion. Let's think about that word for just a moment. Do queens and kings have dominion over their subjects? Well, yes, they do. But wise queens and kings understand that their position and privilege comes with responsibility. The responsibility outweighs any perceived privilege. The subjects of the royals were dependent upon them for their good care and stewardship. So perhaps we are not called to dominate. Perhaps we are not called to conquer or vanquish. Perhaps God has made us partners in creation. Perhaps we are caretakers. And with that calling comes an awesome responsibility. Let's consider for a moment the beginning of human history. This is a quiz for you. What was the world's oldest profession? No, get that out of your mind. That's not right. Never was right. The world's oldest profession, what was it? Well, actually, there are two professions that could claim that title. And if we look clearly at those two, it might help us to understand a path forward in our relationship with each other and all of creation. The oldest profession in the Bible, repeat back to me, pet owner and gardener. There you have it. Now, the third would have been boat builder. Nichols would have loved that. The fourth would have been winemaker, and many of you would love that. But we're going to leave those for a different day. We're going to stick with the world's oldest professions for now, pet owner. So, how many of you have now or at any time in your life had a pet? Okay, pretty much every hand, just as I suspected. And many, I know that because many of you have talked to me in my office, in the sanctuary, called me on the phone, and you are in utter despair when one of your pets have died. Why is that? It's because your pets are not just animals. They are your companions. They are your friends. They are like family to you, and perhaps they are more lovable and dependable than the family that you really have. This relationship is important, and it's not a casual relationship. I see you out there hugging your animals. It's not casual. It is intimate. You pat their tummy, and they lick your face. How intimate is that? They sleep with you. They cuddle in your lap. They give and receive love and affection. Now, I would maintain that probably more marriages would survive if we just treated our spouses like we treat our pets. I'll just trust you to meditate on that this week. No need to get back to me. Just take inventory and change your behavior if necessary. Our relationship with our pets is intimate. But there's more than that, and you know about it already. Those pets depend on you. They need you every day. They need to be fed. They need water. They need exercise. They need shots. They need to be taken to the vet. They need you, or they would not survive. Now, one of the first things that God did in the creation story was to have the humans name the pets. Who do we name? We name our children. We give our children a name. We know them. They are ours. And we also know that we must care for them. Might we say that they are under our loving, benevolent dominion? Name those animals, God said. Why? Because I want you to know their names. They're not just animals. They are your pets. They share the land and sea and air and water with you. In naming them, you see, God initiated a greater intimacy between humans and the animals. Now, the second thing I'll ask you, how many of you are or have been at any time in your life a gardener or a farmer? Not quite as many as the pets, but pretty good response. I grew up in northern Illinois, surrounded by farmers and farm fields. My father was raised on a farm. My grandfather was a sharecropper. In the beginning, God made Adam and Eve, and God made them to be gardeners in the grand garden called Eden. And this was intentional. God could have made them financial advisors, but God didn't. God gave them responsibility for the garden. And what do we know about gardens and farms? Gardens don't grow on their own. They need care, pruning, watering, weeding, planting, harvesting, protection from extreme heat and bugs. And I grew up surrounded by corn and soybeans, and I know corn and soybeans don't just grow. The soil needs to be cultivated, cared for, and nourished. Crops need to be rotated. You see, there's a relationship between the gardener and the garden, and it is intimate. And there's a relationship between the plants, the soils, Mother Earth, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, and the rain that falls from the heavens. And to what purpose? That all might go forth and multiply, that the earth might be fruitful for every living creature, that all of creation might experience abundance. The stories of creation teach us of the critical interdependence that we have with the natural world. The stories of creation remind us that we are pet owners, intimately connected to the animals, the birds, and the fish that we named. Yes, we are gardeners, and we are in charge of the garden that is ours. But there's something else God has given us. It's called free will. And we will live with the consequences of our actions. It should be noted that God did not protect the farmers of this country from the devastating effects of the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. It should be noted that God did not protect the people of Chernobyl or Hiroshima. God has given us dominion, and God will not save us from ourselves. Now, as we think about creation, there's very little that we can do to harm creation long term. No, the earth has survived and thrived. She has endured much more than we will ever do to her. Creation can withstand and recreate itself. It can withstand anything. But humans, not so much. We cannot destroy creation, but we can destroy ourselves, our pets, our birds, our bees, and the environment that is the garden that God entrusted to us. We cannot destroy creation, but humans could go the way of the passenger pigeon or the western black rhino, extinct. All of the animals had names, names given to them by the pet owners, their guardians, those who were given dominion, those entrusted with their care. To what end? That all of creation would be blessed, fruitful, and multiply. That means that the wolf and the owl are your pets. The hills, rivers, and coastlines, your garden. We have dominion, and we have an awesome responsibility. And discussions like this, discussions about the environment, about global warming, about the habitat of the orcas, or the spawning rivers of the salmon, these are not discussions outside of our faith. No, they are central to our faith. It was the first responsibility that God gave us. It is the cornerstone of our calling as human beings. If we destroy the environment entrusted to us, there'll be no abundant life for God's magnificent creatures. Now, at Trinity Lutheran Church, that's this place, that's your place, that's you. We've installed solar panels. We're mostly off the grid. We recycle. We use very little water. We are stewards of nearly 7 acres of wetland. We are a greening congregation, but we are striving to do more. We've done away with one-time use plastic water bottles and replaced them with these recyclable or reusable water bottles. We've also installed all around our campus energy-efficient lighting to use less electricity. And in the year ahead, we will be using up our inventory of plastic forks, spoons, and replacing them with bamboo utensils that can be composted on our own property. The environmental problems, I know how it feels. I'm with you on this. You read the articles, you hear the news, and sometimes it just all seems overwhelming. And it would just be easy to throw our hands up in despair and say, I can't make a difference. But we can. We can make a difference. Each of us, just as we have in Bihar, India. No one person in this congregation could have impacted the villages of Bihar, India. No, we did it, and we did it together. Now, Lloyd Carter, a longtime member of our church, died this past Friday. He lived just up above the church. He was a World War II veteran, one of the few we have left from this greatest generation. He served in the Pacific Theater. And as I thought about that great war, as it related to our conversation this morning, I thought, you know, if we'd have just sent Lloyd all alone over there to do battle, we would have lost. One man, one woman could make no difference on their own. But when millions and millions of men and women joined the war effort at whatever level they could, they defeated the powers of evil and changed the world. We, my friends, are stewards. We are the pet owners. We are the gardeners. We are called, all of us, to treat this world and its inhabitants with the same care and kindness that we would extend to our pets. So what can we do? Go to the grocery store less often. I didn't say buy less food, just go less often. Plan ahead. Shop for the entire week and combine your errands and do it all at once. Drive less. Now, I would tell you all to take up bike riding, but I don't even want you on ladders, so let's not even go there. But that doesn't mean there aren't things you can do. You can recycle, and you can eat food that is locally grown. Food that arrived at your table without flying or being driven hundreds of miles in a truck. And you can make the commitment to have 2 dinners a week without meat. It'll be better for your health, better for the environment. and do away with those one-use plastic water bottles or containers. Carry your own shopping bags when you go to Payless and quit using those one-time plastic bags that they give you there. Use less water, use less electricity, buy products with the least possible packaging, and fly in airplanes less. It will make a difference. Now, of course, we can do all this and we're still gonna need the government. This is a big problem. We're gonna need the government's help, so we need to vote. And we need to write letters, and we need to be advocates for the environment. My friends, we are not responsible for most of what happens in this world, but we are responsible for our garden, for our neighborhood, for our corner of creation. And this call is not optional. It is the first calling of God to human beings. So let us together make every effort to leave this planet better than we found it. We can make a difference. And that is the gospel of the Lord.